It's Bullseye on the Afternoon with Andy Bull Barch and Matt Douglas on AM 930 WEOL.
Taking you right up to 5 o'clock this evening for the Scholastic Games of Lorain County. Presented by the Elyria Public Library System. Again, that's coming your way at 5, and that'll take you right up to the first pitch between the Indians and the Tampa Bay Rays. Yours truly, Andy Bull Barch, in studio, flying solo today. You'll hear my tag team partner, Matt Douglas, on the news updates, but Matt will be back with me tomorrow. Tomorrow will only be a one-hour show because we have a Budweiser from the Dugout show presented by Ray Gittich Heating and Air Conditioning. And while we know what's going on with the Tribe, well, we're still trying to figure out who the Cavs are going to play. We do know they're going to play on Wednesday. We just don't know where they're going to be or who they're going to play just yet. And here to provide more insight on the Cleveland Cavaliers is Rick Noland of the Elyria Chronicle-Telegram and the Medina Gazette. Rick, thanks for joining us as always. And before we get to the Cleveland Cavaliers situation, I want to touch on what we witnessed yesterday with the Warriors and the Spurs. And before we even get to the game itself, I want to know, why did they play game one of that series before game seven of that Boston-Washington series?
That is a great, great question, and I wish I had a sensible answer for you. I have no idea. I know they want the Warriors on Sunday afternoon as much as possible, the Cavs as well. But I think a Game 7 series would have drawn just as well ratings-wise. And beyond that, made much, much, much more sense schedule and rest-wise, not just for the East, but for the West as well.
Yeah,
but I don't know. I have no clue who makes these decisions and how they arrive at them. Somebody makes a lot of money doing it. So,
yeah, and it's interesting, too, because, I mean, I mentioned before the open of the show, you have two huge markets in Boston and D.C., so it's not like the teams that were playing were the issue. It's Game 7, and like you said, I think it would have been a ratings grab one way or the other. They certainly could have gotten enough out of that. Now, having said all that, witnessing what we witnessed yesterday, but I think there were a lot of folks that didn't like San Antonio's chances much going into that series to begin with. But now, a big-time gut punch. Not only did they lose a 25-point lead, but who knows what the deal is with Kawhi Leonard. After watching that yesterday, how long do you think this series is going to last?
I can't really answer that for you either, because it all depends on Kawhi Leonard's health, if he can come back and play. I think, this series could go on for some time. I like San Antonio's team a lot with Kawhi. They showed that yesterday and then crumbled without him. But if he can play in game two, I don't rule out that the series goes back to San Antonio tied 1-1. If he's out for any length of time, then the Warriors could cruise into the finals with a 12-0 record.
It's a very, very good team. There's no question. But this is a team that's been riddled with injuries, throughout the playoffs. It's an interesting team, too, when you look at it, because they have a lot of guys on this team that can play. I think consistency with some of these guys certainly has been an issue with the Spurs. But, they lost Tony Parker before coming into this series. And, it's an ankle injury with Leonard. So who knows what the percentage would be as far as how healthy he would be going into game two if he plays, and then if he doesn't, where's he at going into game three heading back to San Antonio? But it sure looks like, we're headed for another showdown between the Cavs and the Warriors. Now, getting to the Cavs' next opponent, and again, we'll find out later tonight who it's going to be. I guess, Rick, when you're looking at these two teams, the Wizards and the Celtics, whoever wins it is going to be very, very tired heading into the Eastern Conference Finals. But as you look at these two teams on paper, and as often as you've seen these two teams this year, do you think one of these teams match up better than the other against the Cavs?
Well, I'll preface that by saying that I think the Cavs should handle either one and handle them with fairly legitimate ease. And that being said, I've felt all along that Washington, even though the Cavs would have home court advantage, would be a slightly tougher opponent just because of John Wall and Bradley Beal and their ability to push pace, produce large amount of points, and take over a game. That's not a knock on Boston, but, you know, they play hard. Their role players are tough-minded, but they really don't have a proven secondary scorer behind Isaiah Thomas. Avery Bradley was been terrific the last couple games, but, you know, the games they've won, they've had their role players kind of play a little out of their mind, I think, and in the games they've lost, they've kind of come back to earth, and Isaiah hasn't been able to do it on his own. So even though the Celtics would have home court advantage, I like the Cavs against them better. I LeBron has proven he can win on the road. I think we're up to 28 or 29 straight series where he's won at least one road game. So if I'm the Cavs, I'd prefer to play Boston, but I wouldn't lose any sleep over playing either one of them.
We're talking with Rick Noland of the Elyria Chronicle-Telegram and the Medina Gazette, actually hitting on a number of different things here today, not just Cleveland Cavaliers related, as the Cavs have been waiting for a very long time now. It seems like they haven't played a game in over a month, even though at the end of it, I think it'll end up being about a 10 or 11-day layoff for the Cavs. In the past, rest has been great for these guys. What would you say the chances are that there could be at least a little bit of a residual effect? This is a team, obviously, a little bit older, a little bit experienced. You know, they've been down this road before, and it seems like this rest-rust conversation happens every time that the Cavs go down this road. But it seems to me, Rick, that this is the kind of team that the Cavs have that could use the rest, and I think rest probably going to be a little bit better than the rust in this situation. And I say that because there's so many older guys on this team, experienced right. guys on this team, where I get the idea that the rust doesn't necessarily enter the equation like it may have over the last couple of years.
Yeah, I would generally agree. It's going to be 10 days and about 6 hours, I think, between games by the time they tip off Monday. And that's a little extreme. They've had eight on two or three occasions over the last 3 years, and I think they even had a nine prior to the finals 2 years ago. But I think they'll get over it pretty quickly. First 4, 5, 6 minutes of the game could be a little sketchy, particularly if they're on the road. If they're at home, maybe the crowd juices them up and they jump out real strong. Again, like they did against Indiana in game one. But on the road could be a little bit of an issue. But, you know, I think over the course of a best-of-seven series, I think the Celtics' tiredness will become a much bigger factor than Cleveland's rust, because I think they'll shake that, 6 minutes into the game.
Rick Noland.
But just 10 games. Andy, it's killing me. I'm trying to write semi-interesting stories, and I am completely shot. It's real hard when you don't know who they're playing, you don't know where they're playing. Today we got Iman Shumpert for interview media availability, and, you know, he's played a lot better, but it's hard to focus an entire story on him. We're now talking about handshakes and Bursa climbers and whether people watch games. We're talking about the San Antonio Golden State game. It's just everybody, players, coaches, media, just wants a game to cover. And at least tomorrow, if nothing else, we'll have a specific opponent to write about. So this next series for me can't get started soon enough.
I think we're all in that same boat. There's no question. I mean, you go an entire week during the playoff season without playing a game, or if you're a fan watching a game, it does feel a little bit uneasy. But again, it's nothing new given what they've done the last couple of years.
Right.
And I guess the other question here is this. I mean, because you're around the scene and you're around these guys, you get a chance to see what the schedule's like when they're not playing games. And I know earlier in the week, Kyrie had mentioned that he would love to scrimmage, but he knows that they can't, because the last thing you want is to do an inter-squad scrimmage just to kind of try and keep yourself fresh, and then somebody gets dinged up. But what's the timeline been like for the Cavs since the end of that Toronto series? I know they were given a couple of days off, but how often have they practiced since the end of that last series?
I actually think they've practiced more than they've told us in the media. I know they were off Monday and Tuesday. They didn't have any media availability yesterday, but I think they were all up there doing something. And quite honestly, I think the media was glad there was no media availability, because we had all run out of questions to ask anyway. But they've done a ton of conditioning on the VersaClimber, a ton of shooting drills. They've gone over some game action scenarios that apply to both teams, but they haven't gone any over much specific information for each individual team, because Ty Lue's kind of fearful of confusing the issue. He mentioned today you don't want to give the guys 15 play calls and 8 apply to Boston and 7 apply to Washington, and then you have to decipher even more trying to figure out, okay, which team was that that did this and which team did that. So tomorrow will be a jam-packed practice and film session. As far as I know, Andy, they haven't done any scrimmaging. Like you said, they don't want a Jim Jones injury to occur on the eve of the conference finals like happened, 40 years ago. So I think I think the moods are actually pretty good, but I think they're actually kind of tired of seeing one another in practice and would much rather put a uniform on and play in front of a crowd.
Well, Rick, we'll cut you loose on this. And, of course, the Cavs made an announcement a little bit earlier today about what their jerseys are going to look like next year. What are your thoughts on the Cavs wearing that Goodyear wing foot on their jerseys next season?
They are very mixed. As an old-school sports guy, I guess I'm against any kind of advertisement on a professional sports jersey. But being an Akron kid who was born in 1961, that Wingfoot logo is iconic, and it's not bad looking. So I think there's a makes sense tie between Akron and Cleveland and Goodyear and the Cavs. I think the logo is actually going to look pretty good. It's only 2.5 by 2.5 inches, and it's kind of on the left lapel area opposite the Nike swoosh. So I'll live with it. I hope one step doesn't lead to another, and pretty soon we have guys out there in NASCAR looking uniforms. But it's a pretty good piece of revenue. I read something online today that Goodyear will gift at least $7 to $10 million a year worth of advertising just from the viewing of the jerseys alone. And when you add in social media, on various other online sites and the like, it could be as much as $30 million a year that it's worth the company in advertising. So certainly can understand the process. And if they're going to do it, I'm kind of pleased that they did it with a company that has really strong ties to Northeast Ohio, actually has real strong ties to basketball. The Akron Wingfoots were a really big deal, from the late 30s to the early 70s. Larry Brown, the Hall of Fame coach, actually played for them for a decent stint. So I think it will mean a lot to the people of Akron. And I think the other people will at least be able to kind of understand it and adapt to it. So not a fan of the decision to do it, but once that was made, I think the outcome for the Cavs is about as good as you could possibly hope for.
And $30 million, that's a pretty good chunk of extra revenue.
Yeah, boy.
Yeah, no question about that. Rick, we appreciate the time as always. We look forward to the end of that game tonight, so that way you'll have an opponent that will know for a fact the Cavs are going to face tomorrow. So we look forward to getting everything going again on Wednesday. Thanks, as always, for your time, Rick.
Anytime. Thank you.
All righty. That is Rick Noland of the Elyria Chronicle-Telegram and the Medina Gazette joining us here on Bullseye on the Afternoon.